Now we're recording. Let's see if I can screw this up yet again.
So, this, Ethan, this is Carrie, like, you know.
William Cat Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
No, Carrie Fisher.
Okay, let's start again.
Carrie Ann Moss.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 92. We're apparently talking about Carrie Ann Moss, apparently, but this is Dave.
This is Ethan.
This is Melissa.
And Barry is off in Indiana doing something, hanging out with friends while Julia has fled the country to England. Fled the continent.
She is in Hungary now.
Is she in Hungary? Mm-hmm. Okay. She's doing whatever, and he's off being a Hoosier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. See, there's a whole lot of really funny stuff we said before, but Dave forgot to hit record. My bad. Oh, look, we're recording now, though. So there's
that.
Good
job.
All right. I will let Ethan start off again with what we've been watching this week. I wonder what you watched first.
I watched this movie. It's called Carrie. And the thing I really liked about it is how there's this girl who wears a hat at the prom.
That's a very odd observation.
Second thing I watched.
Oh, no, you got to go back into detail because this turned you around on De Palma a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Well, as I was saying in our first take, watching this movie kind of made me reevaluate De Palma, because I've always been kind of mixed on the guy. Like, I enjoy Untouchables, Mission Impossible, Phantom of the Paradise, but there's stuff like Casualties of War and Femme Fatale and Mission to Mars. There's kind of like,
Femme Fatale kind of sucked to me.
Yeah, well, other than two particular scenes, but...
Okay. Involving a pool table, I know.
And, yeah, and a bathroom. Anyway, but, yeah, I enjoyed the tone and style of this film so much. And, like, you know what, De Palma, you're a cool guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is good. I mean, he made the greatest American hero, William Cat, be actually, like, a good actor, too. So, I mean, not that he's not a good actor, but it showed everyone that he was a good actor, and... Sissy Spacek is just creepy in it.
And John Travolta, there's actually a scene where he says, "Get her done." And I'm like, what?
Wow, so now we know where Larry the Cable Guy came from. It's all De Palma's fault.
I know. Anyway, the second thing I watched, well, I finally saw Nacho Libre.
Oh, boy.
So I really
Don't sound too excited there.
I really wanted to see the movie that The Wrestler was a sequel to. So, yeah, I watched that.
And as a non-Jack Black fan, should I even bother?
It was all right. It had its moments. I watched it. It played. I laughed a few times. It ended. I carried on with my life. That's all I really have to say.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Anything else?
Yeah, a few other things. I watched Otto Preminger's Bunny Lake is Missing. This is a film noir from 1967, I think. Let me check.
Okay.
Okay. Actually, wait, I don't want to check. That's too much effort. Okay.
It's in the 60s.
Anyway, yeah. It's about this woman who she has a family with her daughter, Bunny Lake, and her brother, and basically her daughter goes missing, and she hires assigns a case played by Laurence Olivier. And I'll just say, though, there's a bit of a twist halfway through where Bunny Lake isn't necessarily the question. I'll just say that. And it's a very interesting movie, not entirely successful, but it has, like, just awesome cinematography, really awesome title sequence by Saul Bass. So I'd recommend it. And I think I think it's being remade, or was going to. So definitely see it. Definitely see it before that happens. I saw Orson Welles' Touch of Evil.
Okay, and what did you think of that?
It falls under the category of I appreciated it, but I didn't love it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I hit this point when I finally saw Citizen Kane. And I was like, I love Orson Welles. I must see everything Orson Welles has ever done. He's a genius. And he's done a lot for modern film. But I'm just not that big a fan, really.
Yeah, it's a good movie, but I think it was part of what hurt it a little for me was the quote from Ed Wood where he meets Orson Welles and he says, "I'm doing a thriller over at Universal and they want me to cast Charlton Heston as a Mexican." That kind of, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I still think his best role was as Unicron in the first Transformers animated movie. Okay, not really, but yeah.
But yeah, I liked it. It's just, it's a movie that kind of, it's hard to like because it really, it shrouds its intentions in mystery for most of the movie, but it's good. I'll revisit it at some point in the future, but...
not in a big rush.
And finally, I finally saw I Love You, Man.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
It was really funny, I found. In fact, I was kind of scared, though, halfway through when how much I related to Paul Rudd's character. I don't really have that many guy friends. Like, most of my best friends are girls, and I don't really hang out with anybody outside of school, and I don't drink, and I could give a fudge about sports and stuff. So I guess I'm kind of like him, and I was like, oh my god, this is gonna be like me in 20 years or so. So,
but it's all about live, right?
Yeah.
Better start going on mandates now.
Yeah.
Make sure you watch out for the guy who tries to move in. Just saying. Yeah, I think it's a fun movie. It's not like the best Jason Segel movie or Paul Rudd movie, but it's still very fun. And yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Fish tacos.
I actually really wanted fish tacos while watching that. I was like, oh, I could go for some.
The man cave.
Yeah.
His special little table. I'm just going to leave it at that. Okay. I guess I'll go next, and I'll lead off with the one that I know Melissa watched too. That would have been The Blair Witch Project. And we have two very distinctly different takes on this. I'll let you go first.
Go ahead. Sorry. Dave, had you never seen it before?
I actually saw it when it first hit theaters.
And I've never seen it before.
So I think that's going to be, it's going to figure very prominently into this little discussion here. So I'd like to get your take first.
Well.
Other than the DVD skipping a couple times.
Yeah, that wasn't a big problem. But didn't people think that this was real when it first came out?
Initially, yes.
Yeah.
Because they're effing idiots.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But when I was looking on the IMDb for it, all the people technically played themselves. Like, the girl Heather, her name really is Heather.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you really tried to look into it at the time, you probably could have maybe possibly thought it was real. But
did you watch any of the special features at all?
No, I didn't. Okay. As soon as the creepy credit music came on, I was like, okay, I'm totally done with this. I think that, yeah. But
not a fan.
This did not work for me. It wasn't that I was scared by it. It wasn't that I thought it was poorly done. It just didn't... The way that they tried to make this work did not work for me. And I guess... I even remember Josh trying to get me to watch this. And I was just like, oh my god, no. Like, please don't make me do it. Because I just always have heard that this is so scary. And I was like, oh, what the hell? Like, because you gave it to me. And it just did not... get me going in that direction at all. Like, something like The Ring would scare the crap out of me way more than this. And
do you think it was the buildup that you've had for so long and it didn't quite live up to it?
Possibly. And I felt like the movie was trying to build itself up so much to almost nothing. I felt like there was no payoff for your anticipation and your tension throughout the movie. It was like, that's the end? I mean, I kind of actually knew how it was going to end, but... not visually how that was going to be presented to you. And basically the characters were interesting because it seemed realistic, and at first I was like, oh, this whole movie is going to be like this, you know, there's not going to be any outside view of them, it's all going to be through their own cameras and their vision. And that was fine, that didn't bother me. But the fact that they got in such a horrible situation, I felt like, put the camera down. Like, if I were in this situation, screw the camera.
So when the guys were like, Heather, put the freaking camera down, you're like, yes.
And that's kind of a sign that people should have known that it's not real.
Exactly, because who the F would keep recording that if you were really in that situation? And that's where the whole dynamic of the plot lost me, because these people, had they been in that situation, and when they go into the house and everything... they would not have been filming that. I just felt like they should have given up, or somebody would have thrown the camera into the river, you know?
Or it would make a lot more sense that I could see why they would use the camera for the light, but why film while you're doing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially when they were hearing creepy stuff, in the middle of the night, like, oh my god, first thing they do is get the camera. I understand they have to have the camera to have the movie go at all, or else it would have just ended, which it just, it's like a catch-22, you know, you can't have one without the other, but they kind of should have stopped filming and kept going on with their lives, trying to get out of the woods or whatever, and just everything that was supposed to freak you out, like the rocks or the stuff in the trees, I can understand. I was trying to think of if I were there, I was like, yeah, that would freak me out if I was in the woods and I was lost and we didn't have any food and everything's just going wrong, but I just didn't feel like it was scary at all. And nothing was really explained. Mm-hmm. Like, and I guess so, that, like... Go ahead, Ethan.
Okay.
No, what did you say? We didn't hear you.
I just said, which I like.
Sorry, we didn't. I was talking over you, didn't hear you. Yeah, but that, and that totally could work, which could make it scarier, but it just didn't, like, whatever was in that bundle of sticks, like, what even was that? You kind of couldn't tell, and I mean, maybe, I don't know, I just didn't get it.
Okay. Ethan, what's your take on this? I'm guessing you've watched it plenty of times.
Well, I think at a show we did in like July or something, I brought it up so I'd rewatch it. So, and yeah, I think that movie is terrifying. And I think I mentioned the first time I saw it in the theater, it did nothing for me, but I was pretty young. And now just watching it at night, I'm like, even a lot of the stuff, I know people say it's boring, but I just find there's such a sense of dread throughout the movie that just totally creeps me out. And, yeah, obviously a paranormal activity. I hear people keep bringing it up and saying, oh, I hope it's not overhyped like that Blair Witch crap. But no, I still find it totally terrifying.
And it's interesting. I talked about to Barry, and he said that Marty has seen Paranormal Activity, thought it was that Blair Witch was better. And so did Barry, actually, I think, too. I think he said Blair Witch was better, but a lot of people have been saying Paranormal Activity is better. So it really depends on where you come down in this whole thing. I think my background comes with the perspective of when I saw it. When I saw it, I was checking all the websites. You hear all these, you know, oh, it's real, it's real. I'm like, there's no way. And this was this was elaborate, but what they did to set this up. It wasn't just the movie. I'm talking about the PR campaign beforehand that Artisan did. They went to, there's a special on here about like a behind the scenes that they actually showed on TV, I think on Sci-Fi or something like that. And it goes to, they go to lengths that other people wouldn't have at the time, like showing newspaper clippings of, you know, whatever happened at the time in 1800 or whatever. And they went to the detail of making it look correct and all that stuff. So it really set up, it set the stage for a really good, scary time. I also saw it while people were still wondering, is it real? Is it not? By the end of the movie, you're like, no, it's not real. But I think they I understand what you're saying, Melissa, about the whole, like, put the camera down, leave it alone. But there's a point where Josh, that was the stoner guy, right? I think, yeah, the stoner guy was Josh.
It's Josh, Mike, and Heather. Yeah. I kept getting Josh and Mike confused because they never formally introduce you to him.
Josh was the guy with the beard who's kind of a stoner. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where he picks up the camera from Heather and he's filming her and being just a mean prick. And he says, I kind of understand why you do this because it lets you be detached from the reality of what's going on.
Yeah, he's like, it's an alternate reality.
So that answered that for me, but I think it's very interesting that it plays differently for different people because mm-hmm. I'm sure we have listeners who have not seen Blair Witch, and having varied opinions is going to help people temper their expectations as opposed to it's the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's the greatest movie ever by all means, but and even all the stuff on the back of the DVD jacket, it's like, oh my god, like I just thought it was going to be so scary, and I don't do very well with scary stuff, and I was actually like really excited to get scared, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't recommend to watch this, but I think if you want to, I would tell you to.
Yeah.
So
you wouldn't stop.
Actually, just talking about this movie, I got so creeped out that I actually went and turned on all the lights in the room.
Because it's dark at it is almost 4 o'clock, so I guess.
You know what's funny is I actually had to go
your time.
Out in the woods and help my friend milk his goats. And
what?
Well, just ignore that part. But yeah, I had to go outside at like, I don't know, it was probably like 10 at night, kind of out in
after
Black Forest.
This?
Yeah. I was like, oh, let's go out in the woods now after we just saw that.
Oh,
but funny fact about this, it only took 8 days to shoot the whole movie and it cost $60,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's made so much.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. I think I read at the initial cut of it at Sundance was like 3 hours long or something.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Dang. Well, I like how tight it is. What I like is the fact you know, I give Spielberg a lot of crap, but he did have the whole idea with Jaws of don't show him the shark. Now, he did eventually, but the fact that they didn't show anything really amped up things for me. Like, the end, it's very ambiguous. You don't know who perpetrated what happened. I don't want to ruin it, but...
Yeah, and that's the thing is, there, you know, where's the eyes in the dark night? Where's something that you can't identify that's running past you? Like, I just was expecting something... I guess I was expecting something different, and that's why I was disappointed.
That's all good. That's all good. What else did I watch? I watched The Namesake recently. I don't remember. Have I mentioned that I've watched that recently?
No.
Okay. It was on Barry's top 10 list a couple years ago, and I can't agree more. It's such an amazing movie. Cal Penn, who thought that Harold and Kumar would turn into a great actor in Sulu? I'm just saying. But yes, it's a really good, it's a fascinating look at Indian culture, and just the concept is universal enough that it could play to pretty much anybody, and I really appreciated it and liked it. And my last movie, I will wait for our DVD releases. So, Melissa, I will let you wrap it up.
I watched Step Brothers.
Yay!
I don't have anything to say about it other than it was stupid. And I think that John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell are actually brothers, so...
Stupidly funny.
Yeah, whatever. Dunch. And the disc I watched totally crapped out, so I actually had to, like, skip a scene or something, but nothing overly funny, like balls on a drum set, but and I watched Lord of War, which is on my top 10.
Nicolas Cage?
Yes.
Meh.
I don't know. I just love it, and I love the soundtrack. Antonio Pinto is... I just love it. They play this one song like 3 or 4 times throughout the movie, and just has this eerie sense to it. I just love it. And I just love Jared Leto in this, too.
Cool.
So, right on. Always good. And that's it.
Okay. And, you know, I forgot to say, I've gotten Stephanie watching Leverage lately, too. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Watching through a second time, it still holds up. It's not my favorite TV show of all time, but it is like Ocean's 11. If it's on TV, I'm glued and I'm watching it. So good. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, since Barry isn't here to read off, to lend his dulcet tones to us doing releases, you're stuck with me. Do apologize for that. But things that came to theaters this past weekend, we had Law Abiding Citizen.
Starring Rick Fox and Gerard Depardieu.
There you go. Yeah. The Stepfather, which I'm sure Barry saw opening day, or, you know, wanted to set every theater on fire that played it. The children's loved book, was it 12 sentences long? Something like that? Where the Wild Things Are? And then in limited release, we had Black Dynamite, which I really want to see. That trailer just looks so stupid amounts of fun. And New York, I Love You, which is the stupidest title they could have come up with this for this movie.
That's the name of an LCD sound system song. New York, I love you.
I understand they're trying to go the same route as Parachutem, but wouldn't it make more sense to make the title like the I Heart NY, like the thing that everybody knows? And oh wait, Brett Ratner's involved. Never mind.
Wait, sorry. Speaking of Brett Ratner, don't you find whenever I see an interview with him, he's always like relating something to like his sexual past or something? I was seeing him do an interview about this movie. He says, "Oh yeah, because the short I made is based off my sexual experience of." It's like, what the that guy is such a douchebag.
See, I pretty much quit paying attention after the first two Rush Hour movies, which I liked. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, and reminds me of another thing he said about Rush Hour 3, where he says, because he was saying like how long it took to get the movie made. He says like, it took us 6 years to get the script done. It took me 13 years to lose my virginity, but we got it done. And it's like, oh my, that guy is such a tool.
Wow.
Oh my God.
See, when I was watching stuff with him, he was relating how street he is, calling everything ghetto fabulous and such. Yeah. Yeah. And we also saw Law Abiding Citizen. Oh, wait, no, we have taste. but Ethan saw Where the Wild Things Are.
We did.
What did you think? Because, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk after we were sitting in the same theater and everything.
Yeah. Well,
When you said hold me, I just had to move. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I needed a shoulder to cry on, but you didn't provide it, jerk. Anyway, you know, earlier this year we talked about Up, right?
Yes.
And we talked about how a lot of that movie is deals with some pretty dark and mature stuff and some adult themes, but in that you still had, you know, your talking dogs and your talking squirrels and your guitar playing mouses and your talking birds and your guitar playing birds and your
yeah.
But in this movie, there's some. There is not a single teaspoon of sugar at all.
No,
at
all. No.
And that's what I really loved about this movie. In fact, one of the earliest scenes in the movie is Max when he's doing his snow fort, and his sister's friends crush him in it and stuff. And there's that scene is just it's all that stuff at home is so real, like. It could. There's just even little things Spike Jonze could have done to make it maybe just more broad. Like her teenage friends could have one could have been wearing a leather jacket and had a comb in his hair, and there could have been like a fat guy with glasses. But it's just so real, and I'm obviously I'm closer to my childhood than you are, Dave. But I just so many of the emotions were just so complex, and I related to them so much because I kind of was like Max myself when I was a kid. I was kind of an outsider, and I didn't really get along. And well, eventually, though, when I got older into high school, I became the most popular kid in school. But that, you know, that's another story. But
for another time.
Yeah, but I think this movie is like I said this on my Twitter feed, but I think it's the best movie about childhood since Francois Truffaut's The 400 Blows.
Interesting. Now, did you grow up with a book too?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't. I hadn't read the book until this year. Okay, read the book. That's, like I said, 12 sentences, not really a whole lot to read. So Spike Jonze really had to do a lot to really stretch this out to a full-length feature film, and it didn't feel stretched out. That's the first thing I have to give him kudos for. As I have gained distance from seeing the movie, even since yesterday, I find myself liking it more and more. It is not a happy movie, even a little bit. I think in the theater I was in, the kids were bored to tears.
Yeah, well, a lot of families walked out at my showing.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
and I think my best friend who I sat with said he overheard a kid say, "I don't like this." So, because it's pretty scary too. I should mention.
I guess. I think it was more kids finding it boring.
Well, no, I can see that, but I mean, when, like, Carol got, I'll just say he got angry towards the end, I admit I was even a little freaked out.
Yes, yes. But, and, okay, so is the theory that the different wild things are different parts of his personality or it, if you will?
I completely agree with that. I think that's totally the subtext of this film.
The first thing I thought was when Max was acting out the way he acted out, not even against his sister, because, you know, that's just, you could almost make a case that's just sibling rivalry that's gone wrong. He's in a broken home, so life's not easy on the kid. But when he's up on the counter, had I pulled that, I'd have got the ever-loving beat out of me. I'm just saying. And so from that point, I was like, what? So it took me a while. It's taken perspective to get me back into that. So with that time and perspective, I understand either A, the guy has, you know, the kid has emotional or mental issues, or B, he misses his dad and doesn't want his mom going out with some other guy. And so it makes a lot more sense in that context. And I even knew that during the movie. It just kind of set me off. But the wild things, that was just nuts stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it is very real. It deals very blatantly and openly with the feelings that a kid has, whether they've mostly because they haven't matured yet to really be able to deal with those emotions that they're feeling.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, I think it's important that this movie was made because I think it's important that parents have a movie they can take their kids to and, you know, talk about it afterwards. It's not just be like, "Oh, that was so funny." And then, you know, go get ice cream. It's important, you know, you see a movie with your kids and talk about the emotions it makes you feel and how you saw it. And I hope that happens and not kids aren't just like running out scared and bored, you know?
That's what I call a sticky situation. Sorry. You went to that. We all went for ice cream thing. Wow. How did I pull that South Park reference out? I agree wholeheartedly. I think far too often with parents now it's, hey, let's take the kids to see a movie and just give us a break from having to entertain our children. And this is a movie that will definitely lead to a conversation with parents, between parents and kids. Hopefully. If not, I really don't want to think about the ramifications of not having a discussion after seeing this movie.
So what do you think, Ethan, that book fans will interpret this movie as?
Well, I think I remember reading Maurice Sendak talking about the book when it was initially released and saying how parents are kind of afraid of it, and I think that they'll be afraid of this movie too because it is very frank. And I think it's going to be kind of a cult movie, to be honest.
Yeah,
like can't you just so see that?
Mm-hmm.
I can see it's really be truly being a coming of age film, not for, you know, it's a movie, it's a coming of age story. This could, you know, this is going to figure into a lot of emotional development for a lot of kids, I think. The story's, like I said, it's 12 lines long. So, I mean, there's only, he's got all that part that was in the book in there. And he expounded upon it. I think he expounded upon it very well. You know, I like Spike Jonze. I'm not the biggest fan of Spike Jonze, but I think he did a beautiful job with the film overall.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a great, great movie. And yeah, I think if you're like a child psychologist, this movie should be like required viewing pretty much.
That makes sense. So is this looking, figuring to possibly be in your top 10 at the end of the year?
I'd say it's my number 4 of the year so far.
Wow. Dang. Cool. And I don't think we saw any other releases. We're just taking our sweet time getting through this. Good night. Let's go ahead and talk about the DVD releases for this coming Tuesday. I'm cutting it down a little bit from last week. First off, we've got Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Yeah. No, I'm good. You know, if I can pick it up for like 50 cents like I did the first one. I got the 2-disc of the first one for 50 cents. So I was like, okay, I'll get that.
Maybe they'll put it in a box set. It's all special.
One could hope.
Two disc special edition DVD, $25.99. Racist robots, priceless.
I've also got Sherry, which I forget who all's in this. It's romantic comedy, blah blah blah.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes, yes. If only Brett Favre was in it too, then we'd be all good. Can you tell I'm tired? I'm just saying. We've also got Fawlty Towers, the complete collection remastered, and Black Adder remastered, the ultimate edition. If you're about BBC British comedy, this is like must own stuff. I've got Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the Those Aren't Pillows edition. They're really just stretching for these edition names sometimes.
Yeah.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Because it was coming out, you know, the next week, and this is next week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The William Castle Collection, Plastic Man, the Complete Collection, and a movie that's completely underneath everyone's radar, rightfully so, Hoop Reality. I only say that because I looked at the pre-releases at Hollywood, and that was the only thing that looked even remotely interesting, so I grabbed that. Have either of you seen Hoop Dreams?
Nope.
I know of Hoop Dreams, but I have not seen it.
Okay, Hoop Reality is essentially wanting to be a sequel.
Oh.
They actually follow one of the guys, you know, a good 10, 15 years after the first movie, where his life is now, and...
Isn't that like a... Wait, isn't... I haven't seen Hoop Dreams, like I said, but isn't that like a special edition on the Criterion DVD?
You can pick up the Criterion for like $20, yeah.
Well, not in Canada, but I think on the Criterion there's like a follow-up documentary to it or something where they take a look at the guys like 10 years later or something? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a rather short feature. This goes more into Arthur Agee and his life now and his settling into... society now that he didn't make it to the NBA. And
spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, you know, there you go. There are certain people this movie will appeal to and that will really get a lot out of this movie. I am not one of those people. Colorado is not one of those states. It's a very brutal and honest look at the fact that, you know what, I don't care how much skill you have, the chances of actually making it to the NBA are like 0.0175%.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially this guy has gone and said, you know, my dream didn't come true in the way I planned. He essentially wants to go and find all these kids and help them be more realistic in their expectations. Hey, if you get to go to college for free, you have just built yourself a career, getting hundreds of thousands of dollars of education for free, because you're probably not going to make it to the NBA. So in places where basketball is huge, I think this movie is going to be looked at as, you know, hey, you need to watch this movie. But otherwise... It is so sloppily put together. There are like titles that show up over it, you know, like typewriter print, like Times New Roman. And which it's okay, I don't mind that. The problem was that like 10 minutes before it's supposed to, it pops up this thing, Arthur Agee finds out his dad's church is getting torn down or something. And then 10 minutes later the same title comes up and then they go into it. And it's just sloppy. The DVD menus blow. This is just really, if you're hardcore, you know, go ahead and check it out. There's something there, but it's sloppy and it needed like another month or two at least, you know, then they could have straightened it out.
Well, I was interested, but then you said the DVD menus blow. I'm like, okay, not interested. Cause that's entirely what I base a movie on usually.
Well, the DVD menu is 4x3 as opposed to 16x9. And it's like they framed it for 16:9, but cut it off at 4:3, so you don't even see the full title.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
like I could have
weak.
Done better with it myself at home using Nero is what I'm saying. How bad it looks. So yeah.
Speaking of that, when I saw the movie yesterday, I think that it was digitally projected. I think they kind of screwed up the image though, because when the title came up, it cut off a bit of the title. Like it said, "Here He Wild Hings Ray."
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our DVD theatrical releases. Let's do some news, blow through this, and go talk about the people under the stairs. Should we start with the Hitchcock thing, since neither of you watched it?
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I only came across this because Roger Ebert Twittered it. I didn't know he had Twitter, but so I followed him the next day he put this up. Apparently, Hitchcock did an interview with Tom Snyder for an entire show when they were doing a show called Morning. So it was like, you know, an after midnight live show. And it's a great interview with him. He tells some awful, awful, dirty jokes that are just hilarious. Really gives a good perspective on his life. This is like, I think it was like 3 months before he died or so.
Wow.
And it's fascinating. So well worth checking out. Maybe I'll put like the first one up in the show notes and then you can click through them through YouTube. Because they're all on YouTube, which is even cooler yet. But yeah, if you're a Hitchcock fan, you must see it. Not on Hulu?
That's, yeah. I was just pointing that out.
Okay. Which means that you can watch it actually, right?
Yeah.
Woot. All right. Did you have something, Melissa?
No.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to talk about... I don't even have anything to say about How to Tame Your Dragon.
Oh, that's right. That's
a piece of crap DreamWorks.
This is a coming of age.
Oh!
Literally.
Oh, dude. Okay, let's move along. We've already got... Now that we have our explicit rating out of the way, Ethan, what you got?
Well, Just My Luck and Smokin' Aces star Chris Pine will be the new Jack Ryan.
I don't know what to think about this. Are you a Jack Ryan fan, really? Or
I have not seen a single Jack Ryan movie, read a single Jack Ryan book, played a single Jack Ryan video game, eaten a single Jack Ryan burger. Listen to a single Jack Ryan album.
Oh, dude.
Painted a single Jack Ryan painting.
Okay, then.
A single Jack Ryan shirt.
All right.
So, yeah.
Okay. I read a lot of the books. I think, like, the first, like, 10 books from Tom Clancy I read, at least. And Chris Pine is a little too good looking. I'm just saying. Now, granted, this is previously done by, you know, Ben Affleck and Harrison Ford, but... Dude's got a little bit too much pretty boy going on, I think, for his own good. I don't know.
Maybe he'll be like DiCaprio and he'll get kind of uglier as he gets older. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. I'm
not... I don't even know where to go with that. Okay, yeah, it's happening and big fat who cares. Okay. Would have been better if he'd been doing... It would have been a better career move, I think, if he'd gone Green Lantern, but that's just me. All right. Mm. Okay, then. Well, this one was really generated some discussion. All right. I guess I'll do my one other story, which is that Jackie Earle Haley is apparently in the front runner to be Sinestro in the Green Lantern movie.
I heard otherwise. I heard apparently the scoop was... Well, I heard Devin Faraci from Chud got the same scoop, but apparently in his... he will not be... Sinestro will not be the villain in the movie, and...
That makes sense.
It'll be a different guy that Jackie Earle Haley will be playing. So.
Oh, so then, he won't be playing Sinestro.
No.
Interesting. Okay. Frankly, you know, with how much great work that Jackie Earle Haley has done lately, the fact that whatever the next thing he does intrigues me. Even if I wasn't a big fan of Watchmen, he's still intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
I want to see him do Little Children too.
Your sister's a werewolf?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. What else have you got, sir?
Wait, isn't there another thing you mentioned about the Green Lantern?
Oh, theoretically, Superman might have a cameo if they nail down who's going to play Superman in the next movie.
Not going to happen.
No, there's no way. There's no way. They have to have an idea for... They have to have Superman at least in pre-production before they could even think about putting him in the Green Lantern movie. Although I do like the frame of thought of keeping it all in one universe, since they have the control over the entire DC universe to do it.
That would be really cool, but You're right. That's not going
to
happen.
No, no. I would love to see the Darkest Night storyline from Green Lantern turn into a movie that would just be like the most expensive movie of all time. But it'd be awesome. Sorry, my comic nerd was showing. Ethan, what else you got, sir?
Trailer for Mel Gibson's return to moving pictures has come out. Edge of Darkness.
Or as I like to call it, Taken 2. That's why I'm not a big fan of this trailer. It looks like Taken 2.
Well, they're like releasing it in the same spot that Taken was released, too.
It's late
January.
What's your take on this, Ethan? You haven't really said what you think about this trailer.
Well, I've last week I said I'm not a big fan of Gibson as a director, but as an actor, I find him immensely watchable and charismatic. So, you know, I'd be interested in seeing this, but the actual trailer itself, eh.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I couldn't take it seriously for some reason. I just realized it's the Taken ripoff factor.
It's just a story that's already been done before.
Yeah, although if it was Taken 2, then he could say, "Give me back my daughter," you know. Then.
Well, actually, apparently, this is based on a miniseries that aired in the 1980s.
Yeah, because everything was great in the 80s, let me tell you.
So I'm just saying, it's not like this is a ripoff of Taken.
I know, but that the feel of it, the look of it, definitely reminded me of it. I'm a man you don't want to screw with. You know, instead of "Give me back my daughter," it's "You're all gonna die." Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. It's all good. We've got plenty to talk about when we get to our main topic, which is the People Under the Stairs, starting our series on Wes Craven, which I'm sure we'll have more in depth from Barry next week. So, but anyhow, in the meantime, let's take a quick break and we will be right back.
Gilroy 2.0 is here. Gilroy 2.0. is everywhere. Gilroy 2.0 will be everywhere. And John, and Dr. Mike, and Father Thomas, and the psychopathic John Alpha, as the most popular podcast novel series in history, gets a reboot. Seventh Son Descent is in print now. The beta clones are back with new scenes, new set pieces for the print novel. The President of the United States is dead, murdered by a 4-year-old boy, and it's up to John and the other beta clones to hunt the man behind the assassination, John Alpha. To celebrate Seventh Son Descent's bookstore debut, author J.C. Hutchins, that's me, is releasing more clone-killing content at his website and beyond. An entirely new serialized podcast recording of Seventh Son Descent's print edition manuscript, serialized PDFs of the book, free music by John Smith, Seventh Son, 7 Days, a prequel anthology, and the full text of the novel, serialized at boingboing.net, all available now. Support the print debut of Seventh Son Descent. Learn more and download the free audiobook and other content at jchutchins.net and at podiobooks.com.
This is Nana Visitor, and this is Screen Geeks Radio.
And our thanks to J.C. Hutchins for letting us run that promo. Seventh Son Descent is coming out soon. I think I might even be talking to J.C. again pretty soon. Time to start our new series, because, you know, it takes us a month and a half to get through one at a time. So now we're on to Wes Craven, though. One of the arguable masters of horror. Who else is there? You got John Carpenter, Wes Craven...
Uwe Boll.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, have you heard his new movie doesn't suck?
I've heard that, actually, yeah.
It makes me want to see it. Mm. Who am I thinking of? The guy who did Midnight Meat Train. Clive Barker.
Yeah.
Those are kind of like the main guys from like the 80s.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Wow. Yeah, see, Barry is so much better at this than I am. That's what happens when you teach film history, though. So
he's a knowledge base that we will never reach.
Yes, indeed. Anyhow, we're starting off with The People Under the Stairs. This is the movie that made Ving Rhames' career. Like, I saw the cover, I was like, Ving Rhames is in this? holy crap.
I know, it's kind of funny.
And so this is, Barry lent me his copy of the DVD, and when he gave it to me, he like held on to it, and he's like, this is like the exemplification of having a message behind a horror movie. And it totally is. I mean, it race, class, you know, boundaries, and
yeah,
Home Alone.
That's interesting that you point that out.
Yeah, yeah. So, what did you think of this, Melissa? I mean, I'm picking on you today for some reason.
That's fine. I just immediately, when I started watching this, it's like, okay, this is going to be the kind of thing where the neighbors are interested in what's up with this people's locked up house, or, you know, what's up with somebody's freaky basement. And it's not a repeat like The Burbs and Disturbia are, and how they're all kind of ripoffs of whatever. But this felt really original to me. And a lot of aspects of it just, it all worked well together. And I very much enjoyed it. I liked it. I felt like the music was really 80s still.
It totally is.
But it worked for me. But it was just like, oh, this was made in 91, but it seems like it was made like 5 years prior.
At least it's not like Lady Hawk 80s bad. If you ever want to see a good movie be ruined by a soundtrack, watch Lady Hawk.
Mm, I won't, but the child performances are just great in this. I loved it, and
yeah, the kid, what was it? The kid who lived in the wall.
Fool.
No, not Fool. No, the kid who lived in the walls.
Yeah.
Wall Boy?
Yeah, we'll call him Wall Boy.
No, his name... Oh, crap. I just was reading about it on...
Wally?
On DVD, too.
But he was like the fan, the number one fan, the first fan in That Thing You Do. I'm like, this kid looks so familiar. Holy crap, it's him!
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's random. I know.
The parents were just such characters, and they really stuck to that, and I really thought that was amusing, and just the dad walking around with a shotgun the whole time, and something about the dad's character just really reminded me of Bruce Campbell for some reason.
Okay. Except for the costume he wears at the end of the movie.
Yeah, but just how he's all, his face is all bleeding, he's just kind of crazy, but...
Totally. What did you think of those, Ethan?
Well, I should note about those two that played the parents. They played husband and wife on Twin Peaks as well, and I believe that Craven casted them that because he saw how well they worked together. And after watching this movie, I went to the At the Movies website and watched the old archived review of this, so that I could steal points from both Ebert and Siskel. And
you mean Ben Wise didn't talk about this?
If only. I think Siskel pointed out is that the parents were basically the Reagans.
That's a very interesting point.
Yeah, like they looked exactly like them, and yeah.
I guess kind of, yeah. The, as far as the physical appearance, I could see that. I could see a case for that, totally.
Yeah, it's just all part of the subtext of the movie, you know? And also Ebert called it Funeral Home Alone.
It so is. It's such a Home Alone movie.
Mm-hmm.
As in the movie...
It's not the really... cheese pizza, but...
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a scary movie. I think we should get that out there first. I mean, it technically is a horror movie. It does earn its R rating, but it's not that scary. It's more you're along for the ride.
It's basically Wes Craven's The Color Purple.
Wow. Although, okay. I will say... After seeing this movie, I could see why Ving Rhames had such a brutal reaction in Pulp Fiction to the Gimp.
Mm. Yeah, he looks like Aaron Neville in this.
He kind of does, yeah. Like more black power, but yes, yes. Fool was great in this movie. This what I love is the fact that this is why I think Wes Craven deserves a lot of respect, is because he did make a movie that is a message movie that's still a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it has very bad rap at the end of the album, at the end of the movie.
I love that, though. The end just turns into a party.
Yes.
I love that.
But it makes it a socially conscious film more than... Yes, it happens to be taking place in a horror film setting. And it really elevated the genre, I think, to a point where a lot of people don't take it since then. What?
And there's a scene where it's just a very small thing in the movie, but where Fool, there's like a TV and they're showing Gulf War footage on it. And I thought, ooh, maybe that's a little...
Oh, that's interesting, too.
Yeah, I noticed that because I was like, I remember that because I was in junior high when the first Gulf War happened.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah. If you guys were born, I'm old. No.
Yeah, I think I was 4. No, I was like, I don't want to say. Anyway.
I served, but, you know.
Because you went back in time and then served, right?
Yeah.
That's how committed you were to this. To the, okay. I have no idea where I meant, where I was going with that. What did you think about the people who were under the stairs?
I thought their makeup was awesome. This holds up.
Yeah.
I love the part when Fool was like, you don't even need to get out there with the rest of the world and the women. And the guy just kind of, oh.
Yeah.
I love that. That's such a great touch. This is a movie that really is a fun movie. It is not a, I really almost say it's more of a comedy. Because there are some points where things happen and you almost have like that cartoon whoop, you know, thing when someone falls down. And it's almost a Gremlins level. It's not as good as Gremlins, I don't think. But
definitely not. But yeah, it's, there's whatever, the part where the, at the end where the mom is stabbing, about to stab the little girl, and then the people under the stairs ruin the stairs or whatever.
Spoiler.
Sorry. Well, it doesn't.
I know, it doesn't, no, it doesn't.
She's a this crazy mom, you know what's going
to
happen.
This but. Movie isn't really hard, is pretty hard to spoil, frankly. Yeah.
But, yeah, it was tense and, you know, the music's going and everything, but it's not scary. The way it was presented was not scary. I don't know, but parts when Fool's first walking down the stairs and he's got a lighter and stuff, I think that was actually really captivating. Not necessarily scary, but it...
It was tension-filled. I guess we should talk about what the storyline is, actually. And that would be that Fool lives in the ghetto. I think this takes place in L.A. or New York, some metropolitan area,
I don't know
whatever.
If it's said, but...
But his family is behind on rent. They're about to get kicked out. And mom has cancer and can't get it treated just because they don't have enough money. Ving Rhames, Fool is a kid. I don't know how old he is. What, probably like 10 or so, maybe. Ving Rhames plays a hoodlum who decides, you know what, we're going to go rob the people who are our landlords who are jerks, and because they got treasure, so we're going to get some of that treasure, and, you know, we got to make our own way. Very much in that thug kind of way, they take the stupid white boy with them. That's really the only purpose he serves. Mm-hmm. They go to break into the house, they wait till the family is gone, and horrible, horrible things happen. Mm-hmm. That's really about as far as you really need to...
Well, they
describe it.
They can't get out of the house. Again.
This is true. It's easier to get in than it is to get out, and you find that throughout the entire movie. It's a pretty running theme, which I really enjoyed. Like, especially when he escapes the one time and then finds out why he can't escape that same way the second time, and people die all kinds of various interesting ways. I'm just going to leave it at that. And there's a little girl involved. The people, the landlords are really jacked up in ways I really don't want to give away either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a very... I really was pleasantly surprised at how much I had fun with this movie.
Me too.
Yes.
Overall, I'd say it's a movie with about 20 minutes worth of interesting content, which is better than I can say for a lot of movies. So overall, it's all right. It's kind of fun. It's kind of interesting. Nothing great. Nothing special. Just not bad.
Yes, yes. The greatness is yet to come in this series. What I like is the fact that we're, you know, since Barry's not here, we can talk about our own personal connection to Wes Craven, which mine is, for most people, will be the Scream movies. You've seen just the first one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen all three of them, Ethan?
Yeah, and Wes Craven is also my uncle, so kinda, I have a big personal connection there. So.
There you go. Okay.
Sweet. I didn't know he was... Canadian?
Only half.
Okay.
What? Okay. Isn't that just saying wasp in a different way, pretty much, then?
I guess.
Okay. Just checking. I'm trying to remember if Wes Craven did all three Scream movies or if he just did, like, the first two.
No, he did all three.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That loses some points for me.
Actually, wait, I just realized I haven't seen Scream 2.
Oh, you haven't? You've just seen 1 and 3?
Yeah.
Did you see 3 just because of Jay and Silent Bob, or...?
Were they in it?
Yes! When they're on the studio tour?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I gotta revisit that.
You really don't, actually.
The first
one is amazing. It kind of did change the tone for horror films for a while. And the second one was okay, and the third one just... I thought it blew.
Didn't the second one have Joshua Jackson in it?
Did it? I think it might have.
Because then I would have definitely have seen it, but...
I think he had at least a cameo in it, yes. Yes.
Okay,
I don't know. We'll continue the discussion of Wes Craven films throughout. Yeah, okay, People Under the Stairs. It's fun. It's worth checking out. You know, that's what I love is that this is more... These series are more about us broadening our own horizons than anything else.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, yes, it is a celebration of great film directors, but sometimes, you know, they're not all the best of movies. Like, we're going to have some bombs coming up, I'm sure. but it's all good. The rest of the series looks quite fun. Next week, I think we're doing Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which is a very interesting film. Yeah, I'll leave that one alone at that. You've seen that one too, Ethan, right?
Yeah, I watched it once at the USA Network on 1 in the morning when I was on vacation in Los Angeles.
So you're going to watch the real version then?
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. You know, if I was, you know, more prepared, I'd have the notes up for what's coming out in theaters next week, but now I do. coming up next week, we have got Amelia, which this has gotten no buzz at all whatsoever. There hasn't been a trailer out for it or anything.
I saw a big giant cardboard poster for it up in the 16th Street Mall, but yeah, nothing.
Not getting a lot of love. Equally kind of odd is Astro Boy, which I haven't seen a trailer or anything for this until yesterday when I saw Where the Wild Things Are. It looks kind of fun. It doesn't look like something I particularly need to watch.
I think it looks like a speed racer kind of thing.
Which would be a good thing.
For you,
Ethan. So you weren't the biggest of speed racer fans? Oh my god,
no. Oh god. Anyone that mentions, oh, let's watch that again. Like, wait, seriously? I don't know. I'm sorry.
I've seen that movie 3 times, and I love it every time.
It's just so long.
A little, but I don't care. It's a lot of a good thing to me, so I'm okay with it.
Fair enough. Then we've got Cirque du Freak, the Vampire's Assistant.
Yay.
I'm with you on this, Melissa. The vampire movies just kind of need to...
And then we get New Moon. Oh, like later.
Oh, but I'm so there for New Moon.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to go see that one, I guess.
Jacob!
Kill me.
Could you... Okay, let me ask you this real quick, Ethan, since we got into vampire stuff. Could you not see the kid playing Max being in the Let the Right One In remake?
Yeah, I could actually. Now, just, well, with different hair, but yeah.
I could see that kid pulling that off really well. Like, if someone were to take it seriously and make a good version of this movie.
Which won't happen, but...
Yeah, just totally a random thing.
Well, and I was just thinking about when you were talking... I was thinking back to our previous discussions of Tim Burton. Can you imagine, like, a Tim Burton-directed version of this? How bad it would be?
Oh.
Well, not bad, but it would just be kind of... It'd be like, you know, Johnny Depp as Max and...
It'd be wacky goth guy, so I wouldn't like it.
Yeah, and it'd just be all about the art direction and Helen Bonham Carter as the mom and,
Well, we could hope that Brett Ratner did it so we could have Jackie Chan being the vampire and
talk
Chris
about
Tucker.
how he lost his virginity to a goat or something, but there. Yeah.
Ah, okay, let's move on. To something even more disturbing somehow, Saw 6 is coming out.
Yes.
Say what you will about it. I will find a way to see this movie. I you know, seriously, 5 years ago, there's no way I'd ever be saying I was watching this any of these movies ever.
Do it for Josh.
I'm not seeing any of the sequels till they're put in Smell-O-Vision, so there's that.
Wow, okay. I'm curious to see if they can keep up what they've been establishing over the past few movies.
Well,
crap.
Didn't you see that cool poster? Or it wasn't even a poster, it was like a total teaser trailer, and there's...
It was bad CG, though. It was really bad CG.
Yeah, it was kind of low quality, but it was cool. They make his face.
And that's the interesting thing, is I have no interest in the traps at all whatsoever.
Well, they give it all away anyway. If you follow them on Facebook, every other day, it's like new footage, new pictures, like, let's just tell you everything that's going to happen before you see it. I mean, so...
Okay. And then coming up in really limited release, we have got Ong Bak 2, a.k.a. The Living Video Game. That's really what Ong Bak is, because, yeah, that it's going to be fun. I'll see it at some point, just not in the theater paying money. And I guess in like a whole 58 screens, Nightmare Before Christmas in 3D will be showing.
Oh, my gosh. Is that going to come here?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. I have to see that.
Have you not seen it in 3D?
No.
You should, yes.
Totally taken page. Oh, I got to go see that.
What were you saying, Nathan?
Wait, whoa, you're forgetting one thing.
What am I forgetting? I don't know if I forgot it. It might have been an omission.
You're forgetting Lars von Trier's Antichrist finally hits theaters next weekend in, of course, limited release, but...
I didn't see that on Box Office Mojo, my bad.
Yeah, I know, I was looking there, too. They didn't list it. I'm like, bull crap. But,
so more and more people are seeing this as more of a very dark comedy than anything else.
Yeah, it definitely deals with some serious issues, I think, in a very interesting way, but at the same time, there is a talking fox saying, chaos reigns. So yeah, it's just watch it. Yeah, be aware that Lars von Trier had his tongue in his cheek just a little bit while making this movie. Just saying.
Okay. And you know, I totally forgot. I saw freaking A Serious Man this week. I haven't put up a review.
Want to talk about that?
Week.
Sure, we can. Oh, I see how you are.
Go for it. I want to hear about.
I totally agree. Is it the current train of thought across a lot of people that this is retelling of the story of Job? Have they like come out and said that?
You're the Christian, you should know. That's what I said in my review.
I know you haven't. I totally saw that, but I was just wondering if a lot of other reviewers have said the same thing. I was kind of staying away from reviews.
Yeah. I started the trend, but yeah.
Good man. See, we're trendsetters here at Screen Geeks, all because of Ethan. Yes, this is very much a story of the story of Job is in the way that only the Coens really could do it. This is definitely an absurdist film because the stuff that happens in this movie, when a guy wants to like take your wife, he doesn't come over with a bottle of Bordeaux and say, "Hey, are you doing okay with all this?" That whole thing, Cy was hilarious in that movie.
All the dream sequences were just awesome too.
They were. There's another Jew, son.
Oh yeah, like I saw that at the Toronto Film Festival. The reaction that scene got was just like crazy.
Could people stop laughing?
Yeah, just like an explosion of just reaction. It was pretty.
Yeah, the theater I was in, we were just dying laughing. It is not a movie that really. It's really, you know, really not a whole lot really happens in it. Like you could have told that story in about a half hour. But you're glad the Coens didn't take a half hour to make that movie. It's so hard to really describe because it's so odd. When Richard Kind is the biggest name that you have in your movie, that's either going to be really good or really bad.
Yeah.
And it was really good.
There's a guy from The Big Bang Theory in it, too. So.
Yes.
Oh, I like that, too.
Yes. I dug it. It's worth checking out. I will admit I'm a little bummed that they didn't... If they're going to do the Job... allegory that they should have finished the whole story, but that was just a personal take on that. At the same time, I really wasn't disappointed with the final scene. I kind of liked it.
I loved it, yeah.
A lot of people are like, what? No, I need more than that. No. Well,
Hank Hill was in your audience?
Yes. Damn it, Bobby. Yeah. Oh, I won't do the rest. I'll do the rest of those impressions off mic, off the air. But yeah, I dug the crap out of that. Let's go ahead and talk about DVD releases, though, now, because I just bunny trailed us big time. But yes, check it out if you get a chance. If it comes out near you, definitely check out A Serious Man. DVDs, we have got Battlestar Galactica, The Plan, coming out on DVD like 2 months before it actually airs on the Syphilis Channel. I don't know. The fans were kind of bummed, and they're like, wait a minute, we get to see it earlier and own it. So, okay, who cares? Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs, Orphan, Barry's favorite pick of the year. The next three title releases are actually going to make Barry very, very happy. We've got Night of the Creeps, which he's been wanting for so long. It means I have to put it in the top of the Netflix queue. Tales from the Dark Side, the second season. I know he loved the anthology TV series. If I could talk, I'd be in so much better shape. And for me as well, The Prisoner, the complete series mega set. I love The Prisoner. It is one of the greatest TV shows of all time, let alone sci-fi. It's so good.
Can you give us a short synopsis of that?
Yes. Guy is essentially a secret agent man who is fed up with the government, decides to quit. And the government says, I'm sorry, you don't get to quit. We get to retire you. So they knock him out, kidnap him, and throw him on an island with a bunch of other ex-agents that he can't escape.
There's so a Simpsons episode that's
a
takeoff.
Was this in the 60s?
Yes.
Is there a big giant balloon?
Yes.
I love that show too. I actually have watched all that with my dad.
It is an amazing show. Mm-hmm. Well worth checking out. It's been released a few times, but it's like $50 for the whole series now as opposed to like $150.
Cool, you're going to buy that, and I'm totally going to borrow it.
Fair enough. I have no crap title for the week because I saw The Prisoner and just kind of stopped and was very, very happy. Yes. So I guess that's about it. We have voicemails. We've got like four voicemails in queue. So I'm going to play the first two this week, and then we'll get caught up next week. And we'll go from there.
Hi, this is going to be short and straight to the point because I did have something of substance to add, but now I don't forget. Of course, this is Valencia. I'm hoping Barry got my email about Basic Instinct. I would like to say last weekend I saw snakes on a plane. I know it's all about snakes, but I could have done without them. I liked it more than I thought I would. Of course, I saw mirrors and... Yeah, I'm not going to talk no more about that. Monsters versus Aliens. I actually liked it, and when it was out in theaters, I had thought about going to see it, but I changed my mind. I saw Crank 2. I love Jason Statham. No comment. Coraline, this was my second time trying to look at it, because the first time I fell asleep to it. Cause I think because I was tired and it just didn't interest me at first, but I actually liked it. Kind of cute. Anyway, Fearless, I picked that one because out of the stuff that he actually let me pick, because sometimes my friend don't let me pick. He'll just pop it in the DVD player and we'll just watch it. But out of the ones that he had on the table, I picked that one, even though I don't like martial arts movies. And then finally, the next day, he made me watch Basic Instinct because he was surprised when I told him a while ago that I had never seen it. And I really didn't care to see it, but he made me see it anyway. And my question to Barry, if he didn't get the email, I'm assuming he did, but what was so special about that movie for that time? I don't get it. I mean, even when I watch it, I think because I watched it now, it doesn't interest me and I'm not impressed. And I've seen that scene over and over again and you know, whatever. But, the only thing my friend liked about Mirrors was Paula Patton and Amy Smart. And, yeah, no more comment on that. All right, bye. Okay, two more points. I'm sorry. The intro to last week's show, what was that? I loved it. Maybe it was a mistake on your part, but I love the fact that it kind of started off like that. It was like a behind-the-scenes thing. And another thing, which is slowly slipping away from me, and I can't remember what it is, and I really want to think about it before I hang up, and I can't think of it. Oh, the turnaround time of how quick the episode came up. I love that. I didn't have to wait 3 days for that. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm gone. Bye.
And our thanks to Valencia for both of those voicemails. Yes, I screwed up.
No, you didn't. That was good. That was good.
Well, it's already been corrected, so people who have downloaded the episode after I made the correction have no idea what she's talking about. I accidentally left like the first 30 seconds before we recorded in there, which was kind of a throwback in a way, if you want to say stylistically. It's not, but it's kind of like when we used to do the live broadcasts, which I'm toying with doing the idea again. I just don't know if I have the bandwidth to do it here at the house. That's the only thing. To do Skype and, yeah.
I'll fly over to Colorado. Don't worry.
Okay, there you go. When it, you know, when that happens, then we will do a live show. Absolutely.
It's only like 1,500 miles, you know.
Well, yeah, and 1,500.
I got
miles.
Air miles.
Do ya? Holler! Yeah. You should come out for the Denver Film Festival then.
Sweet.
Hit all the festivals. See, once we're rich and can do this all full time, then we can go hit all the festivals and just all hang out all the time.
Then we can just watch movies and read books and do what we like to do.
Exactly.
I wish I could do that.
That is the dream. Someday. Okay, maybe not. Even if not, it's okay. We have fun. It is all good. Yes, and I think Denver Film Festival is coming up in November. It should be a good time. I know both Barry and I are going. I might try to get Melissa Snell in for some good stuff, too. Apparently I might get a chance to talk to the guy who's making the documentary, The People versus George Lucas, which could be a lot of fun. I'm hoping that goes through. because it sounds fascinating. I'd love to talk to the guy. But if you'd like to shoot us an email, send us a voicemail. There is two more voicemails, but we're holding off just because we don't want to overload everyone on voicemails in a week. You can shoot us an email at podcast, Ethan, Melissa, Barry, or Dave, all at screengeeks.com. You can also give us a call at 719-553-5664 and leave us a voicemail there. Next week, we are doing Wes Craven's New Nightmare. It shall be much horror movie fun and goodness. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Ethan.
This is Melissa.
Take it easy.
You were awful sissy about that icy water.
Shrinky dink, remember?